Where were you February 12th, 1995? Does the episode number 2F12 ring a bell? That's right. It's Homie the Clown, DVD audio commentary. This is Matt Groening mixing it up.
Mark Kirkland, I had nothing to do with the show, but I'm here for moral support.
David Merkin, executive producer and showrunner.
David Silverman, I had nothing to do with this except direct it.
This is one of my favorite shows that David has done, and it is so fluid. There's a lot of movement in the show, and it just looks, I always say, it looks a lot like the old Warner Brothers cartoons to me, which is a fantastic compliment, isn't it, David?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's one of the best compliments I can get. Thank you. And I thought it was a great, crazy John Swartzwelder script, and I read it, and I was just laughing all the way through, and it just tickled me, and I felt very fortunate to get the script, quite frankly. A lot of great stuff in it, particularly the upcoming lighting the cigar in various many expensive ways. Oh, by the way, that great pose of Cressy leaning forward was a Brad Bird note, which I really appreciate.
Was he around at this time?
Absolutely, yeah. His notes were very useful as
well. Whatever happened to him?
You know, he's probably on Skid Row somewhere.
Obscurity has claimed him.
We got rid of him. My house is dirty, buy
me a clean one. We used to have a gag with him saying about, here, Pop, here's $100, don't bother me anymore. Something like that. Yes, but she still... I
don't want to hear the end of any sentences. This is a classic Swartzwelder script. It was very, very well done and conceived by John and came in. We didn't do an enormous amount of rewriting on it. They often didn't need them. He's very good at these kind of characters. And these kind of stories where everything is very strongly exaggerated, where Krusty's just spending all that money in, less than 30 seconds.
By the way, I do a lot of low-angle shots on Fat Tony. In fact, later on in the show, there's an angle on him that I got from the Maltese Falcon the first time you see Sidney Greenstreet sitting down with his giant gut in front of a low-angle camera. And it was very useful for Fat Tony.
Joe Mantegna, that, by the way, you know, I'm going to explain a joke now. Action Comics. When I was young, I had a friend who had Action Comics number one, which that was, and it was an amazing amount of money when I was a kid. It was $1,500 for a comic book, and I thought that was crazy, and now it's worth $1,510. No, it's worth $50,000. Is it worth more than that? Maybe $100,000, $200,000? I can't remember. It just
went up, just as you were talking.
Yeah, absolutely true.
I love the little chop, chop, chop motion of the Krusty product, the fine Krusty product.
I've always been sad that we didn't actually put more blood on her lip or any blood on her lip, but we should have. We were being a little bit careful about blood at that point.
Right.
We shouldn't have been.
No, because, you know, we had much more freedom back then.
You did.
Like today.
Joe Mantegna plays Fat Tony, is always a pleasure to direct, I must say. He absolutely adores doing the show, and he always says, no matter what this guy does, I'll come in for it. Even
exactly.
If he just coughs, I'll be there. That's how much Joe enjoys doing the show.
By the way, originally, I think this is a wise guy voice. That's why it looks like the wise guy.
Yeah.
We changed it.
We changed it around. I think this, again, is very meaningful for Homer's character and why he's so popular. He's so positive in an idiotic way that he's excited when the new billboards come out. And just carefully reading them and just thrilled. Look how happy he is as he goes through life.
It's fabulous.
It's really good.
I always like the idea of New Billboard Day. I didn't know that was a concept.
It happens, you know, when they change the billboards. They don't always change them all at once, but we took that license. And he buys every product. And we enjoy doing the sequence where you kind of see how advertising works on the human brain.
And that's exactly how it works, I believe.
This is totally accurate. This is all scientifically worked out. And that's a really wonderful piece of music that Alf did that really captures circus sounds. And this is, the guys are actually on fire.
Yes, yes. I actually remember being on the ground. I was demonstrating to the animator how I wanted this mincing around. I don't know if you guys can see me as I do this.
Anytime you see David Silverman, he is mincing around. So it's a real easy thing. This obviously is from Close Encounters. Instead of the Devil's Tower, it's the circus tent. And great acting there with the tongue out. And just excellent designs on the Simpsons as clowns.
They're great.
David. Yeah,
they work really well as clowns. They all should be Krusty the Clown look-likes.
I'm going to clown college. I don't think any of us expected him to say that.
It's a great exit line.
Hurry up, it's my first day of clown college.
This is my favorite line, too.
Squirm.
I am holding still.
That's a very classic Schwarzweldian logic.
Right, right.
To say the opposite of what you're doing, or to say exactly what you're doing, even though it's wrong, and be proud of it.
As far as I know.
Schwarzwelder just wrote a novel.
Yes, he did.
And the first line of it, as my exciting story begins, I'm being punched in the stomach.
We highly recommend John's book, which you can get on Amazon.com. It's called The Time Machine Did It. And it has all the Schwarzweldian logic and style that you could possibly stomach. So I really...
The title itself just says everything about John. That's his logic.
I think I actually like this bit so much. I actually have this cell of Homer in the good.
I have those pants.
Yeah, they're great looking pants.
He really likes them.
Two of the four of us here are wearing those pants for this commentary.
Again, Dan laughing in all possible variations of laughing.
Stop it! You're killing me.
Yeah, he does that great out of breath sound. And again, you know, the vast majority of the show is Dan talking to himself, because Dan is obviously crusty as well. And you would just never, there's no overlap between these characters and their way of speaking and the timbre of their voice. It's just completely, a complete creation.
This, I want to mention, is a real challenge to an animator to picture a 6-foot man riding a bicycle that size. Beautifully
executed.
Heads
and tail in the wall.
Yes, we kill the wealthy down there. Right, that's there. What Homer says,
exactly.
Obviously.
And this always gets a gigantic laugh.
You know, people love to see a bare ass. That's if I've been in comedy long enough to know that is something.
It kills.
Yeah, it just kills. People enjoy it, and we're never going to stop.
What's that going to cost you? Hey, Bill, what did that cost us?
Nice that we gave the account of the name.
It took us a long time to come up with these variations of what can actually happen going through a circle, and obviously David did a great job in executing them.
I think I've mentioned this before, but back on the Tracy Ullman show, the original design of Krusty the Clown was supposed to be Homer in clown makeup.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what he is.
Yeah, exactly.
But the idea was that Bart worshipped this clown but had no respect for his father.
Right.
But they're basically the same-looking person. Yeah.
Yeah. We sort of enhanced Krusty's model a little bit for this show. We gave him, like, make sure the bags in the eyes are permanent and so forth, and we sort of adjusted his mouth muzzle a little bit just to help distinguish between the two, though.
And the big distinguishing feature is that Krusty has a little tuft on top, and Homer does not.
Exactly. If we didn't have that, it would be really hard for...
It would have been much harder to watch the show and understand it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah!
Just lovely, sadistic behavior is what we're always pushing on
you. Of course, the original end of that act was they all had seltzer bottles that they throw up into the air, like the mortar boards, you know, and it falls down on them and injures. But, of course, this is a much better injury joke, I think.
The buzzer was the way to go.
And this injury joke is...
that's just a fantastic Doppler yell by Homer. And then
that's good.
The styrofoam hamburger sort of crumbled a little bit after it goes in. Yes.
Well, I love when we have the audience anticipate what's going to happen, and then it's wrong. Right?
That's right. We always try and, you know, have whatever you think is going to be the classic moment... And do some sort of twist on that. And that's, you know, we always think that's the secret of good writing, is to not give you what you've seen 100 times or on 100 different shows, but to come up with something that's different.
Oh, this is one of my...
The Estonian?
Yeah, this is one of the great moments of the series,
well,
I think.
Well, great, maybe.
The Estonian dwarf makes a... Now, I guess I made it too violent when I had him hitting and his arms dropping. Oh,
I was insisting on a huge amount of violence in this moment. And then the kids... Stop, he's already dead, is one of my favorite lines, I think, of all time.
I remember I had trouble with
him. But he's still alive, right?
Well, yes.
Please look at my medical bracelet.
He's
a scumbag.
You know, he doesn't even lose consciousness, quite frankly. This happens to be John Schwartzwelder's favorite moment almost in any Simpsons, is the fact that it takes Homer a second to come through the window. Any kind of defying of the natural physical laws is something that can really get us going, and we really kind of enjoy that.
Interestingly enough, too, this is... Kirk Van Houten is not nearly so pathetic yet, and
these were Kirk's salad days. He was in really good shape then. He, as Milhouse says, he was a big wheel at the cracker factory at this point,
and that's where we first learned this piece of information about.
That was in the show.
Huh? This show, that's in this show, right here. And that was our first introduction to that piece of information.
That was what we finally gave him something to do.
Yeah.
Now was that what? The Histonian dwarf, was that one of our very early appearances of him?
I think he first showed up in the Burns Air.
That's the very first time is when he pretends to be I think it's Lisa. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And he also showed up earlier in the car.
We do enjoy that character.
Boy, yeah. You really rutted yourself ragged.
By the way, remember we had to decide very early on whether Krusty the Clown ever took off his makeup. Remember? And he only when we absolutely have to do it, he does. Otherwise, he's like Krusty 24 hours a day.
Yeah, he's just always in the makeup. And anytime we've ever seen him.
Answers the door on the
weekend. Remember the heart attack episode? You look okay. Well, this ain't makeup, you know?
You know, it's actually Dick Cavett. We'll talk more about Krusty in a second. Dick Cavett, I think this probably is one of the meanest we ever were to a guest star. And Dick was a fantastic sport about it. We made really nasty fun of Dick, and we love him, but we did make good fun of him. Dick has a tendency, he knows a lot of famous people, he knows Groucho, he knows Woody Allen, and he always tells stories that involve them with him. And so I use that observation in here, and he didn't have any kind of problem with it. He was happy to do it. And you can see that Homer of all people doesn't even want to spend any time with Dick Cavett. But Dick was great about it.
Here's my controversial comment for the DVD. I think Dick Cavett had maybe the best talk show of the
1970s. His talk show on ABC.
Yeah.
Was an incredible 90 minutes, and it would explore single guests that you wouldn't see on any other show. He then continued his tradition for a while on PBS. And he was always a huge hero for me because I'm a huge James Taylor fan, and at a time when James was really doing no television anywhere, he had James Taylor and Carly Simon on for a half hour, and they talked and they sang, and you just never saw anything like it anywhere else.
But he also had people on, and instead of them leaving... which they'll do on all talk shows now. They slid down the couch or sat in other chairs. And I remember one of my favorite moments was Lillian Gish, can't remember the second guest, and the third guest, Salvador Dali.
Wow.
Salvador Dali came out with an anteater and dumped it in Lillian Gish's lap. And
that's Salvador.
I still subscribe to that magazine, by the way.
What was that?
I subscribed to that magazine, Gigantic Asses.
That is Gigantic Asses. That's all. We all got a free subscription.
Exactly.
The Gigantic Asses. Yeah. We'll put things on the show. Whenever you see a product, it's not because we think it's good for the story. We're trying to get it for free. And we shove it in your face, and we call that, you know, sneaky illegal advertising.
We got a lot of paid after that unplug.
Products that aren't fictitious because they never arrive when we.
It's true, and when we have tried to do it, we've got nothing. We it really is true.
Great little ad lib by Hank, but I'll have the cannoli at the end of that muttering.
Let me get this straight. You took all the money you made franchising.
That's Hank playing Luigi in a wonderful stereotype. There are several Italian stereotypes in this particular show. We just piled them on.
He's spinning the ball on his
just to give it all in one show. Get it all out of the way.
As I was saying, the other thing that Dick Cavett did is he would do the 90 minutes with one guest. Like, he would just do 90 minutes with Paul Simon, you know? And it was just so in-depth and so great. Great guy, and as I said, great sport on the
there's
show.
There's your
Maltese Falcon.
There you go.
Yeah. The Sydney Green Street.
Yeah.
So those kids out there who hate black and white films, at least give the Maltese Falcon a try.
So every Krusty has a tuft except Homer.
Exactly. Well, yeah. He looks so close to him. Because...
Good poses. That's good.
Well, we practice with actual bullets. See how he moved.
There's a controversial moment coming up here that I had to get into a bit with the network, and you'll see it when we got it. This actually is one of our runaway that went on and on. Runs out the door, car, then jet.
Yeah, I like the perspective of over. Jet from
he actually made it all the way to a jet airplane. And, of course, they don't even get that he left. So I enjoyed that moment.
No, that was not the original act break in the animatic. The act break was after Cancel the World Search. That was going to be the break.
Did this change a lot? Did this show change a lot from animatic to color?
Not really.
It was average. It was mostly really good, really successful. But, you know, we always do over the 9 months that we have to write these things from start to finish. We're always looking for what's the spot that's not as strong as it could be. It's great when we start out strong like we did in this episode, because then there's a lot less to do and we have a lot more time to come up with more stuff.
Well, I think by this time everybody was pretty confident about what was working and what wasn't, but I remember back in the early days, there'd be jokes that were funny like the first 60 times we heard them, and then 61, oh, I'm getting tired of that joke, and then we just change it.
One of the secrets, I believe, of good comedy writing and being a good comedy writer is to remember the early response and to not get tired of it, because, you know, what can happen is you're writing and you write something that's really funny and you hear good laughs and there's good response. And then because you have to live with it for a while, you start to lose confidence in it.
Right.
You have to have a good memory and remember that it was funny and remember what was funny about it, because a lot of people panic. And at the last minute, they start rewriting everything. And when they rewrite everything, they're doing it in a very short amount of time. So it can't be very good. It's only going to be something that you've rewritten in a week, instead of something that you spent months honing. And so it's a bad idea to do too much rewriting if it started out good. You must remember.
Remember when you first laughed.
Yes.
Like there.
Very nice, very nicely done with the brush.
This is one of my favorite sequences here.
I love all the bullet sequences. That's my sense of humor in spades, and luckily Schwarzwelder's as well. And it's very enjoyable to see Flanders shot multiple times, and he's saved each time by a religious artifact.
Which is our subtle message, I believe.
And a great thing about Homer, and look how happy Homer is. He's instantly happy after someone. He doesn't quite understand what's going on, as you'll see. He says, what keeps doing that?
Yes, exactly. I told you we should have bought more than three. By the way, does the joke go to Big Five translate beyond the border of
California? That was the big controversy. Fox did not want me to say, let's go to Big Five. I think that was my line. And they said, you know, you can't say that. And I said, does Big Five sell bullets? You know, and they said, yes. And I said, well, where's the problem? You know? And, you know, that was sort of, I say, if it really happens and it really exists and this is someplace, you know, we can say that.
There was an O.J. reference. Didn't
what was the OJ
reference? Didn't he go to Big Five?
He might have gotten his knife at Big Five or something. I don't know. I can't quite remember. But, yeah, there was something about that.
Of course, I am a great fan.
Now, this is, of course, this caricature is kind of a cross between William Hickey and Don Ameche.
I did not realize the Don Ameche aspect from Things Change, from David Mamet's Things Change.
Right.
Joe Mantegna, by the way, is in a lot of David Mamet movies, so there's a connection to all that.
Yeah, that was probably made me think of it. These are great layouts by Ishvan Mayors, and I love the profiles on a confrontational scene like this. It works really well.
It's great lighting, too. I like the dramatic lighting that you did. This is also a fantastic voice by the Don, done by Hank. And it's just, you know, again, another brilliant character that he does. And we probably should bring him back again. This was an idea, I think it might have been my idea to do it like that.
I think so, too, yeah.
And I just love that, the actual POV, and you see them get sad.
That was fun to work out. Rusty shows up.
We tried to do a joke here that did not work, which I think came from, I think it was George Meyer. It's certainly something that George Meyer would do and found hilarious. He thought it was funny to keep to be more and more threatening to keep cocking the gun further back.
Oh, I remember that. We tried that.
Yeah, and we kept trying to communicate that it's more threatening the further the hammer goes back. Because it's in the first position, which is all you need to kill someone. But when they don't do what he wants, he cocks it back even further, and that scares them more. But it never would get anything. No one would ever figure it out. And just the amount of time it took me to explain it explains why it probably was no good.
It is not observational of real life.
You notice the teeth stains he has?
Yes, even that one close up, we decided to give him some teeth stains. I also love the shuffling them two back and forth. That worked out better than I expected it to.
This took a very long time to write, to figure out what their various things that they would do that would be impressive.
Well, it also took a long time to animate, so I guess it worked
out. It all came together. You did it great. And that's one of my favorite jokes, is to hear the Godfather theme on the glasses.
Well, I often tell other timers under the directors, if you can hear the difference, you can see the difference. And that those are very close notes, but you could hit a different expression on every note and read it.
There they go.
It's very exciting. We're speechless. We're so impressed by this joke. We know how it goes. Yep.
And Homer actually outdoes Krusty there, which is such a nice moment for Homer.
Exactly. We didn't expect that from Homer. He just kind of ad-libbed that.
Grazie. You have brought great
bicycle.
This old Italian stereotype.
I love when he talks about being a stereotype. I know it. I am. And that's, again, one of the secrets of this show, is that we do terrible, horrible stereotypes, but we totally cop to it. So that we're making fun of ourselves quicker than you can. So that's our goal. You know, we'll put ourselves down quicker than anyone else can.
Now, about the ending, it's a great ending. Was that just Schwartzwelder's?
I can't remember. It might have been something we talked. I like the idea of having an ending that was that the amount of money was never said, and that it would be incredibly nothing, and then he gives some change, and we thank you. It's all very honest at the end.
Right, of course,
so everything is about nothing. It's also, we do have a tendency to fall in love sometimes with kind of saying "screw you" to the audience at the end, which is a great attitude for success, isn't it? You really want to anger the audience. But you know, again, The Simpsons is so much about making fun of what we're doing as we're doing it that everyone's on board for the joke. But yeah, we do take those shots.
I have to say, having sat in here, that is a tour de force of animation, David.
Oh, well, thank you. I had a lot of great people helping me, so I refuse to take total credit. I'll take a little credit.
Take a little credit, David.
You can't see this, folks, when you're listening at home, but David Silverman just gave Mark Kirkland $20 for saying that.